The Waddle and Sylvie podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook app.
Use promo code WMVP.
Tune in every Friday for the official Waddle and Sylvie same game parlay on the DraftKings Sportsbook app.
21 years or older, Illinois only. Eligibility and terms at DraftKings.com/football terms.
Hey now, this hour is brought to you by NJ Diet. NJ Diet contractually guarantees that you'll lose 20 to 40 plus pounds in only 40 days. Go to njdiet.com or call 855-5-NJ-DIET.
Captain J. Hood, live from the Old National Bank State Street Studio.
On WMVP, WSAT HD2, Chicago.
This is ESPN 1000, a Good Karma Brands radio station. The Bears season begins on Sunday, and we're pregaming on Friday at Binney's Beverage Depot in Lincoln Park. This is a Miller Time Waddle and Sylvie live broadcast on Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Doug Kazarian is going to join us here in a minute. He is a fantastic expert when it comes to playing these football games. He's been a frequent member of the show. We'll, in case you forgot, we'll give you some of the credentials and how Waddle met Doug several years ago.
Yep.
And how he's really made a name for himself out in Vegas. And
yes,
wins
he has
money for people.
Definitely moved on from the days when he and I would host the Friends and Family Sports Center at 4 o'clock in the afternoons on Sundays when everyone else was watching the afternoon games. Doug and I were breaking down occasionally the first games of
sure.
the day.
Who needs the red zone when you've got Waddle and Doug talking on the radio about the games? So we'll get to Doug here in a minute. We're live in Binney's Beverage Depot in Lincoln Park. You can still get here. Plenty of room for you. We've got a nice crowd building. We've got a lot of great stuff courtesy of Miller Lite to give away, including the two tickets, the grand prize, to the home opener on Sunday against the 49ers. So let's come on over, and you can win that. You got to be present to win. We've got an autographed Eddie Jackson football. We've got some great Bears Miller Lite swag to give away.
We got some pizza.
We got the Connie's pizza truck is here.
We've got a full bar, cash bar over here on my left.
We do, and lots of people enjoying it. So come on by. Now let's bring in Doug Kazarian, who does fantastic work on ESPN television. We got to ask him about our parlay, too.
Oh, yeah.
Even if you're anti-parlay, can you humor us and tell us if you like our parlay?
Always. I'll always humor you. In fact, guys, I think what you should be doing is making this the Super Bowl, this weekend's game, just given the popularity of the Niners in Survivor contest. You guys Ooh. Should make this like your big, huge game for the Bears.
Is this the are the Niners the top pick in week one to advance in all of these Survivor pools?
I think we have Ravens. I believe the Ravens is one, but Niners are up there.
Wow. That's a lot of disrespect going our way.
Well, there's only one way to prove people wrong.
Yeah, right. go out and win now. Exactly. So we have the with DraftKings, Waddle and I are doing weekly a bear down parlay, a same game parlay. And this week with Tyler, our producer as well, we went Bears +7.5. We went Niners to lose a fumble and Cole Kmet over 29.5 receiving yards. It tallies up to +500. What do you say?
Why not? I mean, that's an element of betting these days, right? Like, the why not? Like, let's have some yeah. fun. Let's rip. I mean, a couple weeks ago, there was a guy who turned, what was it, like $1.50 or something insane into, like, nearly $1 million?
Yeah.
On FanDuel and a four-leg same-game parlay on NASCAR.
Wow.
So what part of, if you had to
analyze. What are we doing wasting our time, you know?
Exactly. Doug, if you had to analyze the three legs of this parlay, which would you say would be the weak link here? Is it the Cole Kmet yardage? Is it that the 49ers will lose a fumble? There is supposed to be some rain this weekend. Or is it the Bears? We take the fact we're taking the Bears getting 7.5.
I think the Bears are the losing part of that parlay. I think Komet's a decent bet. It's a safety valve for Justin Fields. I think the fumble is certainly reasonable with the amount of running. I think that Shanahan's going to approach this game with, kind of wanting to take the ball out of Trey Lance's hand, and certainly he can fumble too. My approach would be I would think the 7.5 would be the most concerning of those three.
Because that to me seems like a lot of points. Isn't it with a quarterback who's unproven, maybe no Kittle in this game, the Bears on their home field. So tell me why you look at 7.5, a lot of points, as the weak link.
Well, let me ask you this. Why do you think the Bears are good? Like, why do you think they're going to cover? Like, why? What is there to like about this team? Because all I've heard with this team is that they're terrible.
Yeah, and they may be. The roster, their roster isn't great, you know, and obviously preseason doesn't mean a lot, but there's been some good storylines that have built. Maybe we're close to it. But I think they're going to be a little more professional than they've been before. And again,
a little more competitive than what people are expecting.
Yes.
I think that's kind of the thought.
I can get behind that. I mean, look, the week one is a very loose betting market. Last year, we saw 9 underdogs win outright, the most ever in week one since like the early 80s. So the odds market is not exactly tight. Like, I don't know how many teasers you should be wanting to take, teasing teams up and things like that. Like, we saw at the Rams from 2.5 to 8.5 last night. That didn't work out so well. So
right.
It's a very elastic betting market right now in week one. We have 10 home dogs. That's the most ever in week one. So there's a lot to question. So if you think they're a live dog or at least can keep this within a one score, I don't think it's crazy talk. I just, you know, I think the Bears roster is very limited. The D-line's very weak. And, I mean, the field, the verdict is still out, right?
Hey, Doug, when you look at the 49ers and you try to, you know, look through the gambling lens at them, how do you evaluate them with Trey Lance as their quarterback versus Jimmy Garoppolo?
Well, I would be completely fading the Niners because I think Trey Lance is rusty. I think he's limited and all that stuff. But there's a big but. It's Shanahan that's earned that deference, right? He was winning games with, you know, some of these random quarterbacks when Garoppolo was hurt over the last few years, like Nick Mullins. So I just think you have to trust Shanahan in this regard in terms of his development. But it's a really interesting sort of approach because the window for this team is now. And a lot of their playmakers on defense and offense, they are built to compete in a Super Bowl. And Jimmy G was a quarter away from being the Super Bowl MVP. But now they're bringing a young guy who has a high ceiling for sure. But is his window match up with the rest of the roster's window is the giant question. And that's where I'm curious. So it's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out. Jimmy G's, I think, floor is higher than that of Trey Lance, but I think the ceiling is higher than Lance with Lance, and he puts pressure on the defense with the deep ball and also the dual threat with his legs.
Let's go through some of the other games, Doug. You mentioned it's a loose of a gambling market. Is there one game, though, that sticks out to you that you're fairly confident on, whether it's the points or the money line bet?
Yeah, you know, there's two schools of thought here. One is I know some pro bettors who bet basically you take all the bets they have in September and that's equal to the rest of the season. So if you trust your power ratings, you trust your numbers, you're going to make more wages in September than you do the rest of the year. If not, and you need more data points as this season goes on, that's certainly understandable too. But a couple games stick out to me. Panthers, I just think they're going to get the win. The line's down to pick them at some sharp shops. It's not so much of like, oh, Baker Mayfield revenge game. I think it's more of just a bet against Jacoby Brissett. I think he's that bad. And he was terrible last year with the Dolphins when he had to fill in for the injured Tua. And they got immediately better when he went back to the bench and Tua got returned from injury. So I think Brissett is extremely limited. I think it's going to be a very low-scoring game and a bit of a slobber knocker. But I'll take the Panthers to at least win the game at home against Cleveland, again, with Jacoby Brissett. Another game I like, it's an over-under, and it's a Sunday night game. It's really interesting, all these stories with the offensive line issues with Tampa Bay all summer, and then even within the last week or so with Tyron Smith, that some of the futures market adjusted off those injuries, like Tampa's win total, the juice move, some places went from 11.5 to 11. And with the Cowboys, the Eagles last weekend became the betting favorites in the NFC East. Again, all in response gradually or immediately to those O-line injuries. But the over-under for Sunday night did not move. And I believe in the under. I've been talking about it for 2 weeks. I just think Brady, with those O-line injuries, they're either going to have to go 2 tight end sets, get the running back to chip, but I think it's going to be matriculating down the field as opposed to the deep threat.
I think Dak does not have Amari Cooper. I think the Tyron Smith thing, the sack percentage goes from 4.2% to 6.2% over the last 2 years. Without Tyron Smith, yards per play and yards per rush are both down 0.7 each. So I just think the offense has taken, I mean, 51's a lot, and coaches get conservative in the second half when they have a lead. So I'm hoping for a non-shootout Sunday night because I think the market hasn't moved.
Doug, how about the Packers and Vikings? Just kind of specifically this game, I believe the Packers are a point-and-a-half favorite in Minnesota. And in general terms as well, the Vikings seem to be one of those sexy picks for a lot of people. How do you see the NFC North playing out outside of this game?
You know, the Vikings are a sexy pick in this game. They're at home. They're slight home dog, 1.5. Maybe they'll close pick. Who knows? I just have a hard time going against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers after back-to-back 13-3 seasons. I think McCarthy was holding him back. You bring in a new coach, LaFleur. Now, they lost Devontae Adams, but remember last year with Arizona, it was Adams and a bunch of guys were out with COVID, and they still won. And they still played well. So Rodgers will be fine. He's a two-time MVP or reigning MVP for a reason. I need to believe it till I see it. And then, again, the verdict is still out on this coach in Minnesota. We think he's better than Zimmer. He's offensive-minded, all that. But let's see it first.
Yeah.
Is there a dog out there that you like with the points?
Not really. I will say be careful with Denver. I mean, that lines up to 6. I was leaning there for my Survivor pick, but just crazy things happen on Monday night. Remember last year, the Ravens were about 5-point favorites in Vegas. Ravens should have won the game like twice in the fourth quarter. They did not. Went to overtime. Crazy stuff. And the Raiders got the outright win. This is obviously a wider gap of talent, and Geno Smith's the quarterback. Now, if Drew Locke were playing, I'd be all over the Seahawks in this one, but he's not. So I still think the Broncos get the win, but we just don't know how the Russell Wilson magic is going to transfer over to a new team like Denver, and we don't know about their coach yet. I think it's an upgrade because it's a warm body over Fangio, but we're just not sure about that one. But I would say just be very careful on that front.
How about the Steelers getting 6.5 in Cincinnati? I know that the Bengals roughed the Steelers up in both outings last year. But Tomlin going on the road week one, I'm sure that message has been sent to his team.
That's my concern, is because last year they showed this is such a wide gap between the two teams. But I think this version of Mitchell Trubisky is better than the 2021 version of Big Ben. Now, Big Ben had some moments, like in a win over the Ravens, but it's just with over the broader sense and the dual threat of Trubisky's legs. I mean, Trubisky went to the playoffs the last time he was a starting quarterback. Not that he's that great, but I'm just saying he's not. I mean, he's become a punchline, but I think that's a little unfair. So I can't fault anyone for taking the points there because let's not forget that defense is excellent for the Steelers. One of the best in the NFL. They have the defensive player of the year coming back as well. So there's just a ton to like. I just wonder if they just can't maintain pace with an offensive juggernaut that went to the Super Bowl and improved its offensive line, which was the issue last year in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. We, an hour ago, Doug, as we talked to Doug Kazarian from ESPN on some of the plays for the weekend, we had Charles Barkley on, and Chuck told us about his 5 plays that he's got in college football. As you know, he's a pretty big gambler. I think he's taking Texas with the points against Alabama. Didn't he tell us?
Yes.
That he's got Texas as one of his 5. How do you look at the Texas is getting 20.5 points against Bama? What do you think?
Basically, I have a rule of thumb, especially when it's under 40 points. It's either Bama or pass in all the Bama games. I just think there's better things to do than try to get cute and sneak in because you know they're not going to lose by 10. So is it going to be 13? So you're really talking about like a 5-point window from like 15 to 20 that you're trying to hope. And what is it? You think that offense can maintain pace with the reigning Heisman Trophy winner who's now the betting favorite at quarterback? Do you think Saban's defense all of a sudden is going to get exposed in Austin by a young quarterback? I mean, where's the angle? What's the game script? How is this going to unfold where Bama doesn't win by 20? Now, they had some issues last year, but I think the quarterback's much more experienced. I think the defense is better. I think this team's up for this game to go, you know, axe to grind against a big marquee blue blood like Texas. I just have no interest in trying to grab 20 points against Texas unless I got, like, the number 2 ranked team in the country.
How confident are you ever putting a nickel on Iowa?
You know, it's funny. They're like an in-game betting dream. Now, they didn't show it last week, and Waddle, you can speak to this better than I can, but I feel like Iowa is the master of setting you up for third and fourth quarter. They are all about being vanilla in the first quarter and a half, power eye, smash-mouth football,
and then we see the play action, and all of a sudden the DB's, you know, caught cheating up to stuff the run. They use the first quarter and a half to set up the big plays in the second half. So they have no problem going down 14-0, and I have no problem grabbing 6-1 on the money line. And they are a fun team to bet on when they are a dog and playing vanilla and stale in the first quarter. You just have to be understand that the market does not adjusting for the right way for a team like the Hawkeyes.
They also like to punt from the opponent's 35 occasionally as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're not a new age team. They're never going to win a national title doing this, but they are a fun team in that, you know, in those grinded out ugly games and the mediocrity of the Big Ten. Although last year, give them credit, they had a nice run. And even the year, you know, the year they went to the Big Ten title game and lost to Michigan State.
Is Doug, is Vegas fully back now with just the
I'd
feel
so.
Yeah, of the books
yeah,
and stuff
it feels
like that?
It's pretty crowded on weekends. There's definitely like last year we saw the big wave of it in the New Year's, and I think we're back in full swing. No mask ordinances or anything along those lines. People are firing at the window and all that good stuff.
What's your favorite book to watch a game?
Ooh, put me on the spot. It really depends, and it's very nuanced answer. If it's one game, it's different. If it's a bunch of games, it's also different. So I like the super book because I like the booths, and it's really open. It's almost like bottle service space at a nightclub. Circa's great because they have the widest range and you have the stadium swim, but I feel like the booth's a little tight. Feels like I'm in a Denny's sometimes in there. So, but if I'm standing at the bar, it's standing room only in the back, then that's a little different. I'm not as you know, like I don't feel like a sardine. But look, really all these books have kind of mastered it. Like even where I'm you know sitting right now at the Link, they have sort of cubes, if you will. And if you only need to watch a couple games, you have much more space there. And then, but really all the other books have evolved too with flat screens and VIP areas. So you can really get treated like a king at any of these spots. But I think it does depend if you're watching an isolated game like Monday Night Football or trying to cover all your bases on a Saturday afternoon.
You can see Doug floating on a raft in one of the pool areas at Circa.
Oh, yeah.
You watching
sure.
all the
Absolutely.
Games on the giant screens. I could see that.
Why not?
Why not? Exactly.
Doug, you're great. We appreciate your time as always.
Thanks, Doug.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Good luck to everyone.
Great catching up. Doug Kazarian, a guy who, again, used to do ESPN News with Waddle.
Yeah.
And then you guys would be on the radio as well, right?
Yeah, we would do it all. Yeah, and like I said, we used to call it. It was kind of an inside joke. It would be the Friends and Family Sports Center because we would recap the early games on ESPN2. Knowing that everyone that really is interested in the NFL is actually watching the afternoon games.
Right.
So we would just sit there and, we'd have a good time. We'd try to be as professional as possible, but we were cutting up quite
a
bit.
Yeah. I want to get to Courtney. And I guess with the injury reports, Velus Jones is doubtful. He did not practice all week. And then the biggest thing that we want to talk about with Courtney coming up from Bears camp, and not only did she cover Bears camp today, she covered the meeting yesterday in Arlington Heights in the stadium. So she'll have plenty of stadium issues and things. And they said for the first time that it's not going to be a retractable dome. It is going to be a domed stadium permanently. And then Kittle is listed as questionable for the 49ers. But the biggest issue I want to know. Where will Lucas Patrick play? Like, have they thrown us a curveball about Tevin Jenkins? Is Tevin Jenkins not their starter at right guard?
Good question.
We will talk to Courtney, set you up for Bears and 49ers coming up next.
Hey, it's your buddy Tom Waddle here. Let me tell you about the best banking team in Chicago, our great friends and partners at Wintrust. And just like a perfectly designed play, Wintrust creates a game plan to help you reach your financial goals. A checking account for your family, maybe a first savings account for your kids, financial planning for your retirement, a loan for your local business. Whatever your need, Wintrust has the right game plan for you. Wintrust's team of bankers, lenders, mortgage experts, and wealth and treasury management professionals all stand ready for any play life throws your way. Come check out Chicago's Bank, and when you open a new Total Access checking account today, get a special $300 offer. Visit Wintrust.com/TAC or visit them at any of their nearby locations to get to know your banker. Wintrust, proud to call this city home. $100 required to open. Requirements to qualify. Must use link to apply. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
Football Friday and Miller Time. A fantastic combo by any account. Welcome to the Waddle and Sylvie Show live from Benny's Beverage in Lincoln Park. Are you ready for some Miller Time? This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Waddle officially put in his pizza request through Tyler right now.
None of the three of us have yet to partake. Yes. I was like, it's a little late for us to get started.
Connie's Pizza Truck is here. Come on out. Benny's Beverage Depot in Lincoln Park. You want to pick up some stuff, some ice cold Miller Lite for the weekend. You have a chance here to win tickets to the Bears-Niners game, courtesy of Miller Lite. A lot of great giveaways as well. They got a full cash bar here. Great crowd here today. Come on by Benny's Beverage Depot. You want to stay for the rest of the show? You want to pop in, say hello, take a picture? You can do that too.
Come by, grab a couple slices.
Yes. Feed yourself.
Yes.
Why not? Courtney Cronin does great work. She's been busy covering the first full week of the regular season here.
And meetings about future plans in Arlington Heights as well.
Right. That's exactly right. And she joins Waddle and Sylvie right now on ESPN 1000. Hi, Courtney.
Hi, guys. How are you?
We're good. Let's talk game first. The thing that Waddle and I have wanted to know the most is the way the offensive line shakes out, the way Lucas Patrick figures in here, too. Your tweet on Wednesday caught my eye the most when you said that, at least in the media portion that you guys can cover, that he was looked like the first team right guard and Jenkins was behind him. Is that the way it's going to hold for Sunday?
I don't think so. And, I mean, take some of that for what it's worth, because it's kind of like the layup line stuff. That's what I call it, these offensive line drills. And he was lined up across from Cody Whitehair, and that could just be, like, you know, that's respect to a veteran. You let them go first during any sort of individual drills. And, like, I think the thing that we need to take away from what happened with Lucas Patrick this week and what we didn't see is we did not see him snapping the ball. Like, he has... Like, when we talk to him in the locker room, you know, his hand is all bandaged up. And some of that, guys obviously on the offensive line tape their fingers and all of that. But you could tell there was, like, a little bit of a cast, a little bit bulkier on the right hand with his thumb. So not seeing him snap the ball during the portion that's open to us, I think is what you expect. I mean, the guy just had his hand, like, surgically repaired about just a little over a month ago. So what does this mean? Like, does this mean that, like, he'll dress? He's not on the injury report. And I know there's some fans who have asked me, well, if he's dealing with a thumb thing, why is he not on the injury report? It's because he's capable enough to play. So where does he play? Does he start? Does he fill in as a backup? I think the safe approach the team can have this week, and kind of from what I gather in gauging the situation and kind of feeling it out, taking the temperature, talking to some people, like, the smart thing they can do is have Lucas Patrick not get rushed back into things. Like, he's obviously got to be able to latch on to a defensive lineman and use his hands, and that makes it difficult. Like, you know, obviously when you're wearing a cast, he's done it before at the guard position. He's never worn a cast or anything on his hand and been able to play through that playing center. He told us that. So I'd imagine that their smart play is – having good guard depth. And if Lucas Patrick needs to go in on Sunday, that he would end up filling in wherever they need him to. Like, I don't think they're going to end up pulling Tevin Jenkins from the lineup going into Sunday's game and slotting Lucas Patrick in at right guard, because I don't think they honestly need to. They're in a good spot right now where they have ample depth, whether it's Patrick at one of the guard spots. He can play any of the interior spots, but if it's there, if it's Riley Reiff as a swing tackle, Alex Leatherwood, same thing. They're comfortable right now with their depth because they have, you know, more quality depth than they've probably had in a while on the offensive line. So that's how I think the Lucas Patrick thing shakes out this week, even though he is, you know, we do anticipate that he will be dressing this week because he's not on the injury report.
Courtney, you reported that Velus Jones did not practice today. Is it your assessment that he probably won't go on Sunday?
Well, he's doubtful on the final injury report for the week. I don't know why you'd rush that. It's a soft tissue injury. It's the exact same hamstring injury that kept him in and out of the lineup throughout camp. And, I mean, that's just not smart. I mean, it's going to be raining. that there's new sod on the field. We have no idea how that's going to take. And plus, he didn't practice. I mean, you don't practice most times, especially for a rookie. You wouldn't roll them out in a situation like that had they not gone at all this week. So doubtful for a reason. I do not anticipate seeing him out there.
And then in other wide receiver news, are they going to part ways here with Tajae Sharpe? I know they had him on IR, and I think he was going to be inactive for all season. Did they sour on him? What happened there?
Well, he has a ribs injury to his ribs somewhere in that area. It's interesting because they could have put him on season-ending IR far sooner than cut-down day. And, you know, in order to do that, like they did that, and that created a – you know, to be able to carry him over if they wanted to. They didn't have to, like, you know, give up a roster spot doing it before camp or before the deadline of the 53. You know, it's unfortunate. He's dealt with a lot of injuries throughout his career, and I was kind of surprised to see that he did go on IR. And if the team were to release him, he'd obviously, you know, probably get an injury settlement from that. But really, like, he's of, I hate saying it, no use to the team right now because he's not going to be able to play this year, apparently, because the injury is that significant after having that really good game against Kansas City.
Courtney, you've been up there every day. You've followed this team through the preseason. Based on what you've seen, what is your anticipation for how this team comes out in a real game situation against a talented 49ers team?
I think they're going to be competitive, and you know, you can tell the energy around this team being in the locker room this week during an actual game week when there's preparation, there's practice, there's all this other stuff going on around the team right now. Like, there's a palpable sense of energy that, you know, rubs off. And I think with where they're at right now and just the message being preached from, I tweeted this Matt Eberflus's response earlier. Like, if I asked him, like, everybody gets up there and talks about incremental improvement. Nobody's going out there and, you know, projecting things that are unrealistic. And with a young team that has to grow and grow through some growing pains, expected ones this year, that's the right approach. So, you know, I understand why some fans get a little irritated when they see, you know, the team preaching one thing, culture shift, they're building something, second-year quarterback, yet Vegas tells you something different, where the over-under's at 6 wins. It's okay to be at the beginning stage of something and not overachieve in the first year. But I do think against a talented San Francisco team that very much could be in the conversation for, you know, an NFC championship spot again this year, like, there's a talent gap for and just kind of a discrepancy between where both teams are at this state of the game, and that's okay. Like, I know that some people are taking the Bears on the points and taking them to win this week. I did not take that when I think I was on with you guys on Tuesday, and I said that I was going to take the 49ers in this one, and I still stand firm with that, even knowing the quarterback situation there, because I just think there's an offensive line here in Chicago that's trying to figure it out. We don't know how good the pass protection is going to be. We've seen it against, you know, Bears on Bears in a lot of respects, but also very limited sample size from the preseason. So the jury's still out on that, but I do think that you're going to see a professional team, a team that's, like, well put together, not making a ton of mental errors, because we didn't see any of that in the preseason. And usually that's the stuff that carries over that you can tangibly see from preseason into regular season.
Yeah. Tyler had a good question before the show. Other than Justin Fields, give us two or three names that you're keeping your eye on the most.
Offense or defense, or do you have any
you choose.
Any three, yeah, that's your choice.
You know, I am really curious to see, I mean, this is a big year for Cole Kmet. We all know that, and this is supposed to be when it all comes together. What do those red zone targets look like? He's going to get Jimmy Graham's targets. That's going to be where I think his bread and butter is, and that's great news for Justin Fields, because outside of Mooney, you know, who's the proven? Who has a proven connection with Justin Fields that carries over from year to year? No one, really, in the passing game outside of Kmet and Mooney. So that's somebody. And then I know that Dominique Robinson was a full participant in practice today. But of all of the rookies, and he's listed as questionable, he has a knee injury. But of all of the rookies that we've talked about, there's 10 that made the initial 53 with Doug Kramer going on IR, and you know, the way that this group looks, I'm really intrigued by him because before he got hurt, like, high ceiling player, kind of still very raw at the position because he only made the switch, you know, before the COVID season from, you know, offense to the defensive side of the ball. I'm really curious to see what he looks like and what this pass rush looks like because I anticipate there being a good bit of rotation, especially on, you know, obvious passing downs. But what does their third down package look like? Is that where he's going to have a chance to carve out a role for himself? That's something that I'm really looking forward to seeing. It might not be as much in week one because, again, he is questionable for the game. So those two. And then I'll throw Braxton Jones in there because we know he can play. I want to see how well he plays against, you know, real competition and, you know, some of the best defensive linemen like Nick Bosa in the NFL.
Courtney, what are your thoughts on what you heard and saw last night at the press conference regarding the Arlington Heights project?
Yeah, maybe I'm not the best judge of this. Like, why do people get up in arms about indoor stadiums? Can you guys explain that to me? Because I don't understand. Like, there should be no delays in sports. And this is my personal opinion on it. We should not have rain delays. We should not have delays due to weather, lightning, whatever the hell it is. And I think it's a smart move. But there were a lot of people who saw the news last night that we were reporting that there's not going to be, it's going to be an enclosed stadium and it's going to be domed. No retractable roof. And a lot of people are irritated about that.
I don't
really understand the intrigue of the retractable roof. And I, to a degree, I understand what Ted Phillips is saying, where there are mechanical issues, you know, the return on investment's not there. You know, a stadium like U.S. Bank, where I covered games for the last five seasons, is state of the art. I think that the Bears should be seeking to build something like that because when you are moving from such a historic venue like Soldier Field, you have to bring it. And especially if your on-field product is not, you know, elite right away and drawing, you know, drawing fans, drawing eyeballs, you've got to have something else that's going to draw people in. Like, I covered the 49ers in 2016, which was only a couple years after Levi's had opened, and the product was not good. So the fans were not there, and they were losing money, and obviously they had issues with their PSLs for a while in very different states of the 49ers than they are right now. I don't think the Bears want to walk into that territory. So I think there was there was definitely a lot that for the Bears last night saying that they weren't going to talk about the stadium. They ended up talking about the stadium a lot more than they let on at first. And I think the biggest development is what this thing is actually going to look like when they make the renderings and when the renderings are released, to know that it will have the chance to get them at least one Super Bowl, because we know that every time a stadium's built, the NFL rewards that city with a Super Bowl. And then Final Fours, other elite events that want to come to a place like this, because when you're in the Midwest, you cannot put yourself in a situation where weather and other elements are going to deter big events from coming there, and I think that that's the smart play.
I am one of those guys that you don't understand. I'm a best of both worlds guy. I'm a I want my as a fatty. I want my cake and eat it too. So like today, Courtney, it's a glorious day outside. If I were to go out to dinner tonight, or I'm going out to dinner tomorrow for my birthday, so you could wish me a happy birthday.
Wow, that's aggressive.
Thank you. And we're going to be, guess what? If it's nice out
Do you
today,
want her to tell you how handsome you are, too? What else? What other compliments are you fishing for?
It's nothing to do with my looks. So tomorrow, if the weather's nice, I want to sit outside when I eat dinner. When the weather's cold, I want to eat inside. So if you have the capability of doing both, and on June, July, and August days, whether they're concerts, whether they're different sort of events, whether it's a preseason game, whether it's a glorious September day like today, and this was the opener, you can open up the roof, and you can have an outdoorsy type feel like they do in Indy. And like you said, there should never be delays. There should be Super Bowls. There should be Final Fours. Let's close that thing. I like having the options. Today on my drive-in, I had the sunroof open because it was beautiful. The windows were down. On really, really hot days, I've got the AC on, and the windows are up. I just like the capability of having it all. And if you're going to go this far and spend this much money on a stadium, why not have everything you could ever dream of?
Right, and I understand that logic, and I would like to know, like, when they, you know, because Ted Phillips said they haven't even drawn, they don't, you know, they don't know the capacity, it's just going to be bigger than Soldier Field, that they haven't drawn the renderings, it hasn't been designed. I don't necessarily buy into that, because how would you know what to account for in the initial renderings of the entire, you know, project if you didn't know at least, like, what some of the specifications were on the stadium? I just don't think the team's ready to release anything yet. But I would like to know what the cost analysis is on domed versus retractable roof, because he was making it sound like there is a significant, you know, financial non-benefit for a team in doing that. And we know that there's only been a couple teams, NFL teams, in recent years that have built stadiums, Arizona being one of them, that do have retractable roofs. Now, they could be looking at this saying, the roof would only be open during football season, what, September and October at maximum? Because that thing's not going to be open during November. Like, we live in the Midwest. I just think that they look at it from a blanket perspective that if this thing is going to take a long time to build, if this is going to be a very costly project, maybe that for them is a way of kind of cutting corners in terms of the cost perspective. And then not having, you know, because they say that they're not going to have any taxpayer dollars go for the direct structure construction of the stadium. So take that for what it's worth. But I've been to Miller Park. I've been to a lot of stadiums that have retractable roofs. I personally don't need that. I don't know if every fan needs it, but I can understand, Sylvie, your perspective on it, where when we do have nice weather, it is nice to enjoy it, because usually it is pretty miserable here during the winter months.
Right.
And it would be good to, you know, Sunday's going to be terrible with the weather that's forecasted.
Yeah.
And, you know, I bet the Bears wish that they had either a retractable roof or something over Soldier Field so the turf doesn't become an issue when it gets wet this weekend.
I think it's a reflex as well in this town. And I agree. Like, listen, I think your request, Sylvie, is understandable. Best of both worlds. I get it. I also understand where Courtney's coming from. Look, like, if it's not the worst thing in the world if the roof doesn't open up. I think the reflex is naturally from a lot of people that immediately when Ted talks about the reason why you're not going to do it, it's a cost-related issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's just, you know, for sure, a lot of Bears fans, that the immediate reaction is, oh, there they go again, not willing to spend money the way other franchises are willing to spend money. Whether that is accurate or fair, I think in a lot of ways that's the reflex for many people.
Yeah, and I understand that. With the renovations that were done to Soldier Field, and I think most people will say that they don't like them, the ones that were done back in, you know, the early 2000s, and how the team handled it then, the amount of money that was poured into that place for it to look like that.
Yes.
That's the hard part, yeah, for fans. And I'm with you guys, because I think if you're going to do this, you have to go all in and do it right, which means don't create a sterile environment. You know, from a lot of fans, like, Soldier Field's a great environment when the product on the field is good. And, you know, it'll never be Lambeau Field in a lot of respect. But there is a lot of intrigue about a place that is that historic and a place that this team has played for the last 50 years. You don't want it to become Dallas. You don't want it to become these other stadiums around the NFL that don't have culture. They don't have an environment. They don't have a feel to it. And there's ways to make sure that you don't do that. And I know I'll keep bringing up Minnesota, but I'm sorry. That is the nicest indoor stadium in the NFL for a reason. It's loud in there. Like, go there on third down and listen to it. And I promise you, your ears are going to be ringing by the time that game is over. Like, it's different in Dallas. It's different in Atlanta. And I say this from covering games in a press box. I hate the fact that there's glass there, and you can't really get a gauge for how it feels in the stadium. And I know it can be loud in moments, but it's not a consistent thing. People like Detroit because of the open-air concept inside the stadium with the press box, and just, like, it's centrally located. It doesn't always have a winning product, certainly doesn't field one all that often, but the environment inside is what matters. So the Bears can look around, and I know we've talked with George McCaskey at multiple points this offseason about, well, you've been to SoFi, you've been to some of these other stadiums, Allegiant Stadium in Vegas. You know, what do you, can you take away examples from that into what you want to build here? And he said, yeah, like they were always looking for ideas. You just hope that if you're going to go all in and do this, don't cut corners and make it be as gaudy as you want with it. Honestly, give the fans like what they want, which is a good on-field product and a world-class environment when they're there. That's what Ted Phillips said the team is striving for, and you don't do that by not trying to make it the most state-of-the-art, the most comfortable, nicest venue from outside to inside.
Really quick, Courtney, just two quick hitters. The 10-year timeline for the whole project, could they possibly open the stadium before then, before 10 years?
Yeah, so their lease at Soldier Field is up. I believe it, I don't have the exact date through, but like I know that Ted Phillips said they're going to honor it. They can get out of it. I believe it's by 2026 or a little bit after that for $84 million. Like they can go early if they want to. George McCaskey, I think, was just trying, since his team is operating in hypotheticals, to give them, you know, hey, the whole thing can take up to 10 years, if not longer. That's not specific to the stadium, though.
Yeah. Okay. And then really quick, in one of these illustrations where they were showing the hotel and they were showing the neighborhood and the retail and employment and everything like that, did they show Central Green? And was that a picture from St. Louis with the arch in the background?
I couldn't tell exactly on the renderings. There were some. I mean, you can go to a farmer's market and apparently play a game of, like, the large chess pieces that you have to move, like human chess or whatever it is. I don't know. Sure. There was a lot going on in that presentation. Yeah. The thing that we all came to see and didn't walk away with were the renderings for the stadium. And I'll be very curious to see when they do release those, because we know now at least there is parking at the stadium, which which lends to the tailgating scene, which is going to be really important when you're trying to bring fans out there and show them that this new place that you're moving this, you know, beloved team from a beloved city and an incredible location from, that the environment's going to be just as good out in Arlington Heights. So, I mean, still a lot left on the table. And I mean, you heard George McCaskey said that they were a long way away. I'll be really intrigued, though, to see what that next set of drawings looks like, because that should include the stadium.
Did you find it odd that they held this press conference on opening night of the NFL season pretty much at the same time as well?
I found it tone deaf because, like, I don't understand how – it's not like they called this on Tuesday. Like, they knew something was in the works. They had to reserve Hersey High School. Unless somebody didn't look at the schedule, I just thought it was a massive oversight, which hopefully doesn't – hopefully it doesn't, like, you know, foreshadow them getting off to the wrong foot on this thing.
Exactly. Their next stadium update will be on Super Bowl Sunday.
Tone deaf is the perfect way to describe it.
Thanks, Courtney.
Thanks, Courtney.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
There you go. We're live at Binney's Beverage Depot. It's brought to you by Miller Lite. Still plenty of time to get out here and win. You took the piece that I wanted. That was good, good crispy pepperoni you just took. A lot of great stuff. We've
Take
got pizza
that, birthday
here.
Boy.
He grabbed it. My mouth has been drooling. We'll get to what to watch for and our picks for the weekend, and we'll talk about some of the things that you want to see on Sunday from the Bears. If you want to react to the stadium discussion, 312-332-3776.